Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is a report of interview with Rear Admiral J. C. Hibbard, H-I-B-B-A-R-D, Royal Canadian Navy, brackets retired, close the brackets, in Victoria on the 21st of November, 1983.
Wait a minute. Well, sir, 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, we met in the Union Club and we said we'd get together and do this tape. And time goes by quickly, and here we are today in your front room looking out over the water, and it's a beautiful day too. So, for the purposes of history, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
The sea was not always as calm as
the sea. No, you've seen rougher seas than this. Now, we've been chatting many times, lunch at the yacht club, your yacht club, all over the place. And you intrigued me by telling me just recently, I didn't know until just recently, that you said you started off as an ordinary seaman. So my first two questions are, when did you join the Navy? Three questions, as what and why?
Well, my brother, H.J.F. Hibbard, was appointed by Commodore Hose to start the RCNVR in Canada. And he went back and forth across Canada and organized the start, the very start, of the Royal Canadian Naval Reserve. And that was 1923. And said, Jim, I think you should join. So I my age ahead a year and a half, and I joined as an ordinary seaman, RCNVR, in the Quebec Half Division in 1924.
My goodness.
And we had one or two Irishmen and English-speaking people. Otherwise, they were all French, and I can remember Pettigrew was the commanding officer at the time. So I joined, and had two very interesting years as an ordinary seaman and passed for able seaman.
Did you? Good.
And able VG satisfactory, and still have my discharge from the Royal Canadian Navy. Reserve.
Reserve. Well, that's a unique start. What were you doing in Quebec City?
Well, my father had a church in the English church south of Quebec in a place called Hemison, St. Malachy.
Do you mind spelling that for the tape?
H-E-M-I-S-O-N-S-T-E-M-A-L-A-C-H-I-E, County of Dorchester. And he had a little school, private school there. He was a parson, church ring parson, as was my brother, H.J.F. Hibbard. And he had always about six or eight students to supplement his income. That's where I started. And I joined the RCNVR in Quebec, and I can never forgotten that we were given a wonderful speech on joining, that we'd have a lovely trip to Halifax, which I did 2 years running. We had a little trip to sea.
Were you in a destroyer?
No, I was in a little ship. I can't remember her name now.
What kind of
sloop? Little sloop.
Sail?
No. Oh. Steam.
Steam.
And we did a cruise along the Nova Scotia coast, and we did training in Halifax.
Was that a naval ship?
Naval ship, yes. Flew the White Ensign.
Wasn't Venture.
No. This was way before. I can't remember her name.
We'll find out. Dr. Douglas has researchers who would probably know about this. I don't, and it's not surprising that so many years later the name doesn't come to you. But you went down in that sloop.
And we went around St. Margaret's Bay, and we went around the Nova Scotia coast, and we did our training for 2 weeks in Halifax. And it did, even in those days, very good seamanship training.
Yes.
Very good seamanship.
Well, that was your
all
life.
All given to us by good chiefs and petty officers who to this day are the salt of the earth and the heart of the Navy.
Indeed they are. Now, we were going to talk about training. What was your training in the Naval Division in Quebec, in the half company?
Oh, we do a night. We get 25 cents for every time we did a drill, and that was an evening down at the drill hall, and we'd march and we'd do knots and splices and we'd usual,
yes,
ordinary naval training.
But what sort of equipment did you have in 1923, are we?
24. I don't think there was any equipment to speak of other than a few ropes to tie knots with and I can't remember any gun
no.
at that time, or the type of gun. We might have had one of General Wolfe's old guns. I don't remember.
You probably had something like that. What was Pettigrew's background to be CO of the half company?
He'd been appointed by my brother to take command of this company. I have no idea what his background was, but he knew something about the Navy.
He knew something about the Navy, yeah.
And, I cannot remember what his job was or his background. I don't remember.
What other officers did you have that had naval experience?
None at that time. Later on, Fred Price took command of the division.
And what was his background?
Well, he was a cadet from the Naval College who left the Naval College when it was dissolved in 1922, was it?
Yes.
At that time. But I was never there with Fred Price.
No. But you had permanent force petty officers or reserve petty officers? Both.
We had one permanent force petty officer.
Yeah.
Excellent man. Yeah. I won't remember his name. And I can remember, which I hate to say on tape, but this is absolutely true. We were given a talk to by Pettigrew, and he told us that we were going to have these nice trips to Halifax, and we were going to have work, and we were going to say, of course, there'll never be a war. But if you ever have one, you'll have some training. And I hate to say this, but a number of them retired the following day.
Did they really?
Yeah. It was sad. But I hate to go on tape and say that.
No, but history has to be served, as Dr. Mm-hmm. Douglas has so often said. It did happen. It's not going to hurt anybody now. It wouldn't have then. I suppose a lot of the division were Quebecois?
Well, you may remember. You won't remember. My father used to tell me. When they started the Navy, it was 1910.
Yes.
When the Navy started. And the Conservative Party sent a lot of people around the villages, around Quebec in the province, and went to different houses. And they said, just walked in and said, how many children have you? Well, you know, Quebec families were sometimes quite large.
Yes.
And they'd say, well, four sons and five daughters or wherever it was. And they'd walk away. And the head of the house would say, why are you asking these questions? Well, didn't you know that Sir Wilfrid Laurier is thinking of starting a navy, and of course he'll need people for that navy. Now, these are a story given to me.
Yeah.
I didn't witness that myself.
No.
But that was, of course, Quebec never forgave them for doing this later. But
no.
That actually happened in these very primitive, the villages in Quebec in the early 1415 was very, very
inward looking.
Yeah. Oh, tremendous. It was run entirely by the church.
Yes.
Everybody did what the church said.
Yeah.
And that's getting away from it.
No, it isn't. This is all background about the difficulties the Navy is maybe having today in Quebec. For instance, the Reserve Division has just been moved into the province of Quebec, to La Belle Provence.
Yes.
And it is, I don't suppose anybody knows it, but maybe their problems go back to Sir Wilfrid Laurier.
They could. What a great man he was, too. And thank God he started the Navy.
Yes.
And that time, you remember, the Navy was put under the Minister of Fisheries.
Yes.
Govro's father. He was...
Brodeur's father?
Brodeur's father.
Brodeur's uncle.
Uncle, that's correct. His uncle.
Yeah.
And he's always been teased. We've always gone growing up in the Navy. And had this as a joke, that when Brodeur, the minister, had his son join the Navy, he said, "This day I give my one and only son to the Royal Canadian Navy." And Brodeur was always known to us as young officers, as young midshipmen, as a human sacrifice.
What more can a Quebecois do, eh, than give his son to the Navy?
Yeah.
Yes, well, that was... well, so did Brodeur do his time then... There was one of them did their time in the Coast Guard before the Navy was formed.
Was that Cossette? I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. I leave it to the historians to give them the background of all this. Yeah. All I can go back to is my brother starting the Royal Canadian Navy, and... the Royal Canadian Navy Reserve, and it was through him telling me to join that I became an ordinary seaman in the RCNBR.
What percentage of your half division would be Quebecois? Half?
90%. Well, they were all some Irish people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Quebec.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So you became an ordinary seaman, and you did 2 summers training in that sloop.
Yep. No.
And mostly seamanship. And in Halifax, did you do training ashore in Halifax?
Yes, some training ashore.
Where?
The barracks there.
What kind of training?
Well, the ordinary same training you did.
No
knots and splices and seamanship and...
customs of the service.
Yes, that type of thing.
Yes. And, well, this is important because I'm going to be moving on to the time, you see, when you were... first lieutenant of a training schooner, Venture. And, so the thread of you as a trainer goes on through to your time as Rear Admiral.
You're quite right. I've been, I think I can go back both as, after store time, I suppose I was Deputy Chief of Naval Personnel, Chief of Naval Personnel. Training has been my life, practically.
So, when did you... And you got promoted to AB?
I got April 6, yes.
Just a second, I want to hear this, make sure it's coming through all right. So, you're promoted AB, and then what?
Then I was going to go to McGill, and while I was waiting, I'd been passed to McGill, and I'd written my exams a year before, and I wrote, waiting to go to McGill when I... wrote the exams for the Navy. And I was up in Montreal doing little summer work as assistant purser to the SS New Northland. And I was up in Montreal, and while I was in Montreal, I was looking for somewhere to live when McGill started. And I got a telephone call from my parents to say I'd passed into the Navy. It was about 90 in the humidity was about 90, and I thought, I think I'll join the Navy. And I wired back and said, I think I'll join the Navy, returning by the night train from Montreal, Quebec. And then, before I got to Quebec, I found that the car met me, and my parents met me, and they said, we've already arranged for a medical for you. So the same day as I arrived back, I went and did my medical. And I think that in 24 hours, I'd signed on into the Navy.
As what?
As a cadet in the Royal Canadian Navy. Appointment to take effect on the 1st of September, 1926. And I left in the SS Sonia on somewhere in end of August to go to England. And I arrived in England in the... We went over with Jimmy Thomas. I remember he just left England because of the general strike in England.
Who's Jimmy Thomas?
Jimmy Thomas was a secretary of the Labour during the English general strike in 1926. Yeah. We had a member of his family. We played a lot of bridge with him. Oh, I could go on and on. You get me all wound up.
Now, that's all right. Before we move you into the Navy properly, where did you go to? You went to high school in Quebec City.
I went to my parents' private school, in high school.
So you went up to grade 12 and wrote your McGill and your Navy examinations from there.
In Quebec.
So here you are in the UK as a cadet at 25 cents a day, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I must tell you, you were overpaid. A big Robbie, you know OCS Robertson?
Yes.
He would have said you were overpaid because when he went to sea as a deckhand in one of his father's ships and he got 25 cents a month.
He was overpaid. Tell him when you see him.
Oh, well.
He's a great friend.
Oh, yes, I know, yes. So you're a cadet and you went to, you're a special entry cadet?
Yes, special entry cadet.
And you went to the training cruiser?
I went to the Erebus.
Erebus monitor.
Yeah. She was a monitor, and that, we did our training there. It was we did our we, people we had to compete with as cadets were all what they call public school boys, really English private schools. They were public schools, all the better schools in England. And they were, we had the steam to keep up with those fellows. They were good.
Yeah.
And we had we slung our hammocks and we in where we studied and we had our meals where we studied and we had one room to do everything in.
Yes. Now these were RN special entry.
RN,
not the darts.
No, Dartmouth. We joined with the Dartmouth later at Greenwich.
Yes. So, what back to training? What training did you do in Erebus?
Well. It was academic.
You
school.
Can't.
I can.
You know your knots and splices by this time.
Yeah, we had gunnery and seamanship and navigation and
pilotage.
You know, vertical trigonometry and all our every day we go to classes at 9 and we have it till 12 and then we go back again at 1 and we go on till about 3:30 when we land every day for sports.
Yes.
In a boat, a harbor launch would come and pick us up and we'd land, and if it was raining too hard, it sometimes did, and the field was out of play, we'd always play in the rain, of course, but if the fields got impassable, we'd go a 7-mile run.
Where was Erebus at this time?
Plymouth.
And did she leave harbor?
Never. Always in the boy.
Counts as sea time, I think.
I think we were... Yeah. Then, when we passed out of Erebus, we became midshipmen.
Who was in that group that later achieved either fame or notoriety that history would know?
I don't think anybody attained notoriety.
You achieved fame, but who else?
The only other cadet joined with me was two other cadets joined with me. Clouston from Montreal.
Clouston.
And he joined the RN.
Yes.
And Finch Noyes and myself joined the RCN on the same day.
Oh. And Finchy was in Erebus with you.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So you had examinations at the end of your cadet's time?
Yes.
Tell me about the chief and petty officers that were training you there and the schoolie that was training you there.
It was mostly schooling. We had a certain amount of seamanship, but we had navigation and a little... it was academic.
It was an academic,
pretty well. And sports.
Do any of those officers from that ship stick out in your memory?
Oh, greatly. See, later on, they took an awful beating at the beginning of the war. One visited me here last month, Casson. The cadets in that class were, we joined later with the same Dartmouth people and ourselves. I think we were about 65, and only 22 got through the whole war. They were all commanding submarines or flying airplanes or... They were all in the battle at very few of my, only 22 of a class of 65 came through the war.
Is that right? This is not the Erebus class, is it?
No, this is the Erebus and Dartmouth at the same time. When we joined the Dartmouth, you see, we Erebus cadets joined the Dartmouth class when we went to Greenwich, Naval College in London.
So you went from Erebus to Greenwich, and they went from Dartmouth to Greenwich.
Yeah.
And there were 65 of you.
We had sea time in between.
Well, what was that sea time?
I went to the Emperor of India. She was a battleship, 3rd Battle Squadron, in the Battle of Jutland. They were all coal burners. The Erebus...
She was a monitor.
No, the Erebus... The Emperor of India.
Yeah, she was a battleship.
A battleship, and I joined the Emperor of India for 2 years.
Well, can you tell me about your Snotty's time in Emperor of India?
I think I've covered this in tapes with Dr. Roy.
Yeah, well, then you have, but I wanted to talk about the personalities that formed you, the Admiral, later. Who formed... You see, you're still in a formative stage.
Yeah.
Well, who were the men that molded you?
Oh... I can still remember. My captain was Captain Pilchard.
P-I-L-C-H-A-R-D?
Yes, and he was captain of the Emperor of India. I remember Commander Rawlings, who was afterwards killed. He was our commander, and that training was simply wonderful.
What about Pilchard and Rawlings, though? What about the men themselves?
The sailors?
The men, the captain.
Oh, they were fine men. They were outstanding.
Yeah, but tell me something about him.
Well,
I mean, was he rough with you? Was he?
Oh, good. I'll give you an example. That's a very good question. One day, I was running the picket boat, and I went ashore, and I was given all things. I got the mail aboard. I had to bring so many things to do when you're running a picket boat and probably towing a cutter. And as a midshipman, and somebody handed me a telegram, and I put it in my pocket, and I worked all day till about 10 o'clock that night, and the next morning I got up, and I went in my pocket, and I pulled out a telegram. The telegram was for the captain. It was from his wife down south somewhere, and we were at Invergordon, and he said, "Unless I hear from you, I'm coming to Invergordon." And, of course, we were sailing the next day south. I went to the duty lieutenant commander, and I said, "What do I do with this?" He said, "You better burn it." And I said, I was more sensible than that, and I gave it to the officer of the watch, and the officer of the watch took it down to the captain, you see.
Yeah.
But 10 seconds later, the bell rang. I was wanted, and I can still see the commander. Hibbert? Your leave is stopped indefinitely. That meant for the rest of my life in the Navy.
Yeah.
My leave is stopped indefinitely.
Yeah.
And so you asked if we had a busy time. You weren't treated too softly if you did anything wrong, I guess.
What kind of punishments are meted out to Snotties?
Oh, I remember not reading enough signal every night after dinner. And at dinner, we always put on a stiff shirt and a bow tie, and we'd have to go up and read signals, you know, at night.
Yeah.
Dot, dash, dot, dash. Yeah. And I hadn't read, several of us hadn't read enough signals and codes. And we all were punished on that by getting up for a week at 3:45 every morning, standing on deck till the hands fell in. Then we were allowed to scrub decks with the hands. At 6 till 7 till time to wash up. You know, you have little punishments like that.
Yes.
All very good for you.
I suppose so.
We were boys' training ship.
Yes.
That's where first training came in. We had to carry 200 boys. You see, but a ship carried about 1,400 people. A coal burner, too.
Yeah.
And we'd all coal ship. And coal ship was, you know, we'd spend, it'd take 2 weeks to get a midshipman's coal out of his system after he coaled ship.
Yeah.
And you do it the good old British way of hoisting it up in a bar from a barge, putting it on a wheelbarrow, sacking it in the barge, hoisting it on deck, putting it in a wheelbarrow, rolling it along deck, pouring it down into the hole. Everybody did the coal except the captain and the padre.
Yeah.
And you won't...
Everybody coal ship.
Everybody coal ship.
And the band was playing to cheer up the troops.
Oh, yeah.
200 boy seamen.
Yes.
And 65 snotties.
That's... Oh, no, we didn't have 65.
No, no. Sorry, that was the previous... How many
I think in my term was 65. I think we had... I would say 16?
16 snotties.
That's from... They weren't all our term, you know.
No,
we only
no.
have three or four from our term. Previous terms, they'd be...
But in the...
People this, had joined in different years.
In this battleship.
Yeah.
And...
I would say less than 16. 14 midshipmen, probably.
Yeah.
And one sub of the gunroom.
Yeah.
Ran the gunroom like a iron. You really had good discipline in the gunroom.
Well, tell me what kind of discipline the sub of the gunroom. For instance, beating was still quite popular. 10 of the best.
Oh, yes.
did you ever get 10 of the best?
Oh, I had them. Yes.
What for?
I think... probably not doing my brass work right. we had steam stations in the gunroom.
Yeah.
We all had tasks to do.
Yeah.
I had the fan for a long time. That was all right, because I used to turn the fan on before inspection, but we all had tasks to do. And it was a great spirit. You have to live this to feel the spirit.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. And the way the seamen, the petty officers, supported the young midshipmen. They had to teach them how to run a boat, and then they obeyed their orders to the letter. You took complete command of your picket boat or your cutter or your whatever you were doing, but how they supported you and how they backed you. And there was a mutual respect that had to be lived to be believed.
Well, it has to be lived to be believed, and it's hard to put it across to people today that a petty officer in his 30s or 40s yes. would teach a young boy, age 19,
20,
to do something,
and
then find no embarrassment in being his subordinate in the boat.
Okay.
Aye, aye, sir.
Yep.
Right away, sir.
Yep.
It's an extraordinary state of affairs, which nobody but people like ourselves, well, I suppose it's known in some regiments, but it's a very unusual thing and quite unbelievable to the youngsters of today. But those men truly... had the welfare of the young officer close to their heart. They were fathers to us all, rather heavy-handed fathers.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. No matter how... What? Somebody always respects a gentleman. You always... It seems to be fundamental. They have held you in very high regard. And I think this idea of putting on a stiff shirt for dinner every night and being disciplined much harder than the sailor was good all around.
Yes.
Very good.
Well, that's a significant point. The snotties were disciplined more strictly than the than the sailors.
Oh, yes, yes. We were right under the toes. We had certain amount of schooling, too, as well as this other seamanship, navigation, and so on. We had schooling every morning and afternoon.
Academic subject.
Academic.
Yeah. Well, who else in your battleship sticks out in your mind besides the petty officers and your captain who didn't get his telegram? I guess it did his...
I think the commander came out so forcefully. We won the regatta in the home fleet. I rolled in the Battenberg Cup at that time, and we trained for a regatta for months. And I say really trained. We used to have to, rowing a whaler, we'd all get up and put turpentine or turpentine on our seats so they wouldn't get all raw.
Yes.
we'd get up every morning and about 5 o'clock and practice before you start off the day, the 6 o'clock hands fall in, and you'd really get down to training for a regatta. A tremendous thing, a regatta in the home fleet at that time. Tremendous thing.
And how many ships?
The ship I was there, Emperor of India won it.
Did she? How many ships were represented?
Oh. We had six destroyer flotillas in the whole fleet. We had the 3rd Battle Squadron, battle cruisers. We had the, huge fleet. I can run names off you.
It's in James. Yes. James.
Yes,
but that's right.
Nelson and Rodney were there at the home fleet at the time. The 3rd Battle Squadron, the Ramillies. I can go on.
Did you ever come in contact with the Commander-in-Chief? You're pretty far down the ladder, but did you ever meet him?
Oh, yes.
And tell me about him.
Now, I can't remember the name of our Commander-in-Chief Home Fleet at that time. That was... I can't remember who it was.
Well, we'll look that up. Tell us what you remember about him. What year are we in, by the way?
That was 1927 to 29.
Yes.
And during that period, we went away for destroyers to the Mediterranean.
With the destroyers, yeah.
And we had 6 months in destroyers to get destroyer training, too.
Uh-huh.
And we left our ship. And we joined up with the Mediterranean fleet and the Atlantic fleet, or the home fleet it was called then, would meet for exercises in the Mediterranean during January, February, March. And we'd go down there, and the whole fleet would do exercises in the Mediterranean.
Now, I'm going to hold that question, which is what exercise did you do, but the occasion that you met the Commander-in-Chief?
It would be a reception in the flagship on something.
Yeah.
I remember going over when King Edward VIII came down to say goodbye to the fleet before he abdicated. And we all midshipmen were asked over for a reception. We were very much taken into things that were happening at the time. I can remember as a midshipman seeing the king just before he abdicated.
Yeah.
You know, enjoying himself. Visiting the fleet, and we'd be asked over to the fleet. You know, the officers would get together, and it was very. I don't think we patted each other on the back. We were invited. Put it this way.
Yes, because he was less of a sailor than his father or his brother, who became king afterwards.
Yes, I think probably was.
Did he wear Admiral of the Fleet uniform? I guess he did.
Yes. Yeah. I remember that very well. That was down in Portland when he came down to visit the fleet in the late autumn of 19. Oh dear, I can't remember.
Well, we've got roughly the years. I've always been curious to know if. He was more of a guardsman, I think. I've forgotten what his regiment was. He was more a soldier than a sailor. His father had done his Snotty's time, and his brother had done his Snotty's time, but he hadn't. So then you're in the Mediterranean. You've got a pretty big fleet with the two fleets there. What exercises were you doing? The usual...
Interception night and cruisers. Cruisers... battleships, destroyers, the usual fleet exercises.
It's been said that anti-aircraft gunnery was neglected prior to the war, and the result was we lost a lot of ships because of it. Surface gunnery was accented, and AA gunnery wasn't. Do you remember?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can. Even when I went into the Second World War, our anti-aircraft gunnery was so primitive. It was sad. It was. On the weapons systems, you'd know more about that than I would, so I'll leave that to you. But the history of the weapons systems.
But there wasn't much anti-aircraft firing when the fleets practiced.
No. We have drogues occasionally sent up and small anti-aircraft guns, shooting at the airplane. And you know the famous story of the pilot saying, I'm towing this thing and not pushing it.
Yes. Well, that story is current today.
And you made the various ports of call. You played formal state visits.
Yes, well, the state, the visits were much more senior officers for, but we visited.
Oh, you ran the picket boats. Yeah. You must have met.
Oh, yes. Around the Mediterranean or Gibraltar and so on.
Do you remember which crowned heads of Europe you nearly met?
No, I don't remember, but I remember the horse races in Gibraltar, which we'd all dress up very formally for and carry a stick, and they'd only know we were naval officers because we had all our binoculars. We'd have the broad arrow showing there were ship's doors to watch the races, but you're never really able to watch the races in Gibraltar because if you won a race, if your bookie had lost, he'd beat it over to Spain, you see, so you'd never be able to collect your money. So you, all you did during the race was watch your bookie to see if you get him before he got off to Spain.
Never heard that one before.
And we had a lot. There was a great spirit in the whole thing, though. It was tremendous, very good training.
Did you run into the Italian fleet?
No.
The German fleet?
No.
They weren't much.
I did this later on when I was serving over there on the non-intervention patrol in Spain.
Yeah, we'll get around to that. So you did your midshipman's time and your battleship. And then
we passed for midshipman and it passed for a sub-lieutenant and went to Greenwich. All went to Greenwich
and
for 9 months.
You 9 months of Greenwich, academic courses.
Yes, all academic.
Yes. The atmosphere there was pretty relaxed compared to a battleship gunroom.
Yeah. Oh, yes, very.
I'll tell you a story. I'm not supposed to be telling stories on these tapes. You're supposed to be, but I was sent for by the admiral running Greenwich for something, a minor misdemeanor on my part, and there was a sub-lieutenant in ahead of me, and I could hear the captain telling him off, and he was saying, "Your marks are far too high, far too high. You're not here to learn how to be a little swat. You're here to go out into the West End and make some contacts which might be of use to you later as a senior officer." And was that the feeling at Greenwich that you were, I mean, you know, you're a pretty uncouth body of young men when you consider the years you've spent in monitors and gunrooms of battleships. You might have put on stiff shirts, but social graces were not exactly... Did you see much of the West End? Were you encouraged to do that?
Oh, yes. We put on a white tie and an opera hat to go up to the theater and pay for 4 and 6 for your ticket. But you'd wear tails and a white tie when you went up there. When we went, we usually go to the theater in a white tie.
You did?
Yes.
How on earth did you do that on a snotty's pay? On a sub's pay? Lots of help from home, I would think.
We have a little help. We were getting $4 a day.
Yeah, well,
we had a Gives bill, which your parents paid.
Yes. Oh. I suppose. I'd like to see you as a sub-lieutenant going to the opera. You left your ship's binoculars at home.
Yeah.
So your Greenwich time and then subs courses, I suppose?
Yeah, subs courses for a year and a half.
Which one of the institutions that you went to did you like best?
I think your old school, Whale Island.
Oh.
Gunnery.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that some time with Gunnery and Vernon for old Portland for anti-submarine and
communication
signal school. Lord Louis Mountbatten took us through the short signal course.
Tell me about him.
Well, I've met him since.
Yes, but tell me about him then.
Oh, he got there on his own ability. No, not because he was a cousin of the king's.
Oh yes,
he's absolutely first class sailor at sea with men, and should we say the right stuff. Did you ever read the book called The Right Stuff?
Yes, I know it. Yeah.
Well. He was the right stuff.
Yeah.
And if I may say so, I think the training brought out the right stuff in us.
Yeah.
Oh, those that didn't have it, they came to it.
It occurred to me, I've heard him speak many times, you know, on a podium in a crowded hall, and I've spoken to him occasionally, just on a one-to-one basis, but it seemed to me that, yes, he had the right stuff, and yes, he was a marvelous professional, but the fact that his father got fired as first Sea Lord in World War I made him more determined than most to do well.
And he did well. I had asked by the governor here to have dinner with him, Enos, my wife, and myself, and I think there were about 20 at dinner, and the government house, not so many years ago, and he went out in the hall. He wanted to talk to me about the College of the Pacific, and he was talking about I was also on the National Council at that time of the Duke of Edinburgh Wards in Canada.
Yes.
I just retired from that last year. And I was out, he came out and he was just talking to Enos and I about something in the hall. And he looked, you know, he's covered from hips and shoulders and everywhere, covered with medals.
Yeah.
He looked at Jimmy Hibbert's little medals and he said, "Oh, I see you have a bar to your DSC."
Mm.
Just like that. You know, it almost, I almost fell through the floor.
Well, he knew the important ones.
Well, no, he was just interested when he's talking about anything at the time.
Yeah. Yes, he was a prime mover in special schools. He was in Outward Bound, too, a type of school, too, wasn't he?
And, yes.
And Prince Philip is also.
Yes, He's a prime mover in this, in his international, he's in colleges around the world.
Yes.
The college here and
Pearson College here?
Pearson College, yes.
Yeah.
He was behind that at the time. And, of course, as you know, he is the one who told me, confidentially at the time, that the present Prince of Wales was going to take on his job. You remember, that's why, I think that's why he went out the hall, he told me that.
The present Prince of Wales is going to take over his...
Chairman of the
college. And he has, hasn't he?
He has, yes.
Yeah, oh, well, that's interesting.
That's why we were in the hall talking about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because he would have been just a young boy at that time. Well, it wasn't that many years ago.
Well, it was only about 4 or 5 years
ago. No. He had already proved he was of the right stuff.
Right stuff.
To do it. So you finished your sub-lieutenant's courses. And you finished this aspect of your training, and the foundations are laid now, really. You've had monitor time, battleship time, ordinary seaman time, able seaman time, reserve division time, your battleship time, your sub-lieutenant's courses, your Greenwich courses. My heavens, you're getting to be a real salt. After sub-lieutenant's courses, what?
Appointed to Canada.
Back home.
Back to the destroyer of Vancouver.
How long were you away from Canada?
5 years then. Well, came back or leave.
Yeah.
Once, we were away 5 years.
Do you think it was a good thing to send a Canadian officer for 5 years into another navy? I know what the Royal Navy was, but this is being debated today, and the historian would value your viewpoint. 5 years away from Canada is a long time.
I think it was excellent. May not be for the present generation, but I look upon that training. It takes 300 years to build a tradition. It takes 3 years you can build a ship. Who was it said, we're governed by tradition or we're ruled by force? We're governed by tradition or we're ruled by force. And you want to be part of the tradition of a service that has the history and the background. You take your tips to Europe now, even today. You see what tradition means. Be it Oxford, Cambridge. I went to both a few years ago, and I looked at the boards at Oxford and found that, you know, 3/4 of the term that came out during the war were dead. These are things that people have fought for, those things that we hold dear in life. I think... tradition is very important, and this is makes me bitter when I see these little twerps in the do away with a uniform, or these things don't mean anything to those people. They don't understand it. I say, God forgive them, they know not what they do. They don't understand. what tradition means. I can remember when the pilot, different little things went on. This is over the years. I could give you a lot of examples of that, but I won't get into it now.
Well, perhaps just one. For instance, to move ahead 30 years, what happened when we lost our blue uniform and went into our green uniform? What happened when we lost the white ensign and took on a Canadian ensign? A lot of people say it's not that important. We are short of ships. We're short of equipment. Maybe we should be concentrating on that.
Well, you know, you've done a certain amount of research on myself. I believe in the thing that matters. Weapons will change, but people are the man is still the first weapon, and it is the people that will win a war. It was Napoleon who said, there are two forces in the world, the spirit and the sword. The spirit's never been defeated by the sword.
And you think we lost something in losing the continuity, even in appearance?
Yep. Yes, you can't explain. The bigger things in this world are hard to put into words.
That's true. That's very true.
And
it's very hard to explain a self-evident truth.
Yes,
is the way I put it.
Yes, it's a better way of putting it.
You're back in Canada, and you went to Vancouver. HMCS Vancouver, yeah.
And the following winter, we went to west, down south, and you know, it was exactly 51 years ago this year, we were in that revolution in San Salvador.
Well,
we returned in there to look after British interests in San Salvador.
Well, tell us about the revolution
in San Salvador. Well, I wasn't in the revolution very much, but we went in there in 1931. And, 32. January 32, we were on our way to Panama Canal, and we turned in there, and we went looked after British interests and brought off some people that were in trouble, and stayed there for a while. And the Americans came also at that time. I sent up the Phillips and the Wicks. I still remember them. And
the what?
Two destroyers from Panama.
Oh, P-H-I-N-L-I-P-S?
The Phillips? P-H-I-S, American destroyers.
And W-I-C-K-S.
That's right. And we went down to Panama Canal, and we didn't have enough money to go through the canal, so they called us home. Navy cut, that time the Navy didn't cut our pay, they just said they were withholding 10%.
Is that so?
And 10% of $5 is 50 cents, you know.
That's a big...